I don't know who normally adjusts the thermostats. I did it this morning, set them on 70, so if that's too high, let me know. We got here early, so we don't want to roast people. We never know how a system works. All right, we're going to be finishing lesson two this morning, dealing with the power of a biblical fellowship, the idea of the friends of David. And we left off last time talking about Jonathan and Saul. I cannot emphasize enough about the importance of this lesson. Matter of fact, tonight in the college age, the devotional, for those that are able to make it, I know this is kind of a night where there's a lot of things that go on socially associated with the game and those things, but I'm going to talk about this subject in the class tonight about the power of friendships and relationships. Saul raised a great son in Jonathan. And the reason why you knew he was a great son is that Jonathan was willing. I'm sorry, I've got my chart set wrong here, but Jonathan was willing to confront his dad. He confronted his dad, and his dad listened to him. And we are very encouraged by that initially. Saul, you know, listened to his son and said that he would not do any harm to David. He swore by the Lord that he would not do any harm to David, but we know that later he ended up doing that very thing. But as we talk about friendships, you want to have a friend that's willing to rebuke you. Proverbs 27 and verse 6, the Bible says, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful." Ever been wounded by a friend? I will tell you, I'll say without any fear of contradiction, the blessings that have come in my life were greatly influenced by the friends that I built around me and by the one that I married. And I will tell you, you want to have a real friend that will get the 2x4 out and crack it over your thick skull when you're going in a direction you ought not. I'll never forget a good friend of mine, used to be a member here. Matter of fact, used to work as the second preacher here years ago, Lynn Huggins. I remember I was talking about probably a debate that I was having in South Alabama and some people that I was studying with. And I got off trying to talk about their motives and talking about what they were thinking and talking about probably what they were going to do. And I remember him slowing me down and says, "You don't know that." And I kept going. He slowed me down again. "Larry, you do not know what you are saying. You don't have proof of that, and you shouldn't think that." He got through to me. Some of those people that I was going off on are faithful Christians today. But, you know, we tend to be that way. We all go into emotional states. Saul went into an emotional state. He thought David was an enemy. He wanted to kill David. And for a moment, at least for a moment, Jonathan, three times, "He's done nothing but good to you. You have no right to do this. What wrong has he done?" And for a brief moment, his dad listened. He was fortunate to have such a son. We need to be very careful, brethren, that we don't follow another's personal vendetta. I think who you associate with is very significant here. You do not want to have the people around you go down into a hole of emotion and start trying to think they can read others' minds. That was a great danger there with Saul and those that he wanted, the ones that Saul wanted to put around him. So anyways, we continue to look at this. Saul, even though, again, he says, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be killed." That's what Saul said in response to Jonathan's rebuke. We talked about that last week. But Saul had a problem that he was never going to come out of. He had sunk into bitterness, and he was not going to come out of it. Nothing David could do, nothing God is going to do, is going to bring him out of it. That's a really amazing thing about the power of bitterness and jealousy and pride. And so another time comes, and again, Saul's trying to kill David. And the next rebuke, well, there's a different ending. One more time, Jonathan confronts his father, Saul, but this time it's different. I guess I don't have the scriptures on this. I must have pulled up the wrong PowerPoint, but that's okay. I can read them to you, and you can read with me. 1 Samuel 20 and verse 30. Then Saul's anger was aroused against Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, did I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, you shall not be established, nor your kingdom. Now therefore send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die." Wow, Saul, you just said not too long ago, as the Lord lives, you swore by the Lord that he wasn't going to die. Anger will make you a crazy person. You won't listen, you won't see, you'll pursue. And now Jonathan, this time, he can't get through. What did Saul do to try to bend Jonathan to his will? Brought up his mother. "You're going to shame your mother." He brought up the kingdom. "Hey man, you want to be king? You want to be king? We've got to kill David." Now, Saul, David was not pursuing the kingship. David was being nothing but a servant. But you see, who gives the kingship, by the way? It's God. Jonathan trusted God, and he didn't have to worry about what other people thought or about shaming his family. You serve God and you do right, and everything's going to work out. But you see, here was this family trump cards brought out. People of the world do that, don't they? They use all kinds of trump cards that the world is impressed by. Well, this time, as we've pointed out, the kingdom was his to give. That this time, this ends up in a very tragic way where Saul ends up trying to kill Jonathan. One more time here, a true friendship is based upon God and truth and true love. You love somebody, you're going to tell them what they need to know. True friendship can't be bought with things, but a genuine friendship is of great value. You know, I'm afraid parents make this mistake. You know, sometimes they think that, you know, they can buy things for their kids, and because they're not the kind of parents they ought to, they compensate with things. And that's not how you develop people, and that's not how you really develop character. Well, what happens this next time, as we've already started reading, is that what ends up happening is that his dad ends up trying to kill him. It's really sad as you read about it that basically just the debate continued in verse 32 of 1 Samuel 20. And Jonathan answered Saul his father and said to him, "Why should he be killed?" Have you ever tried to reason with an angry person? Where they're out of control, the last thing that an angry person wants is reason. Why should he be killed? Come on, Saul, give the reasons. Name one thing David's done to you. Saul's response? Then Saul cast a spear at him to kill him. His own son. That's what anger can do for you. That's what bitterness can do for you. That's what hardening your heart to God's will do for you. You'll destroy the people most precious to you. In verse 34 it says, "Then Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had treated him shamefully." It's interesting. You want to talk about how sad, what anger can make you? Anger can make you a pitiful, pitiful person. Look at 1 Samuel 22:8. He got to the point where he was so suspicious of everybody. "Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. Everybody's against me." Listen to this, how pathetic Saul ends up being. He says, "All of you have conspired against me, and there is no one who reveals to me that my son has made a covenant with the son of Jesse. And there's not one of you who is sorry for me. Or reveals to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as it is this day." You going to be a person of principle? You ready to be that? you're going to have to stand up to spear throwers. How well can you dodge? I was joking with Adam over there. He's got, it looks like, a dozen eggs on the bench over there. I was joking with him if I mess up, if he's going to throw some at me. But, you know, but anyway, but they're a real kind of spear throwers. I don't worry about people throw things at me. The things that people can really hurt is the words and the destruction of reputation and those type of things. All right, men of principle will not be silent. One more verse. And that is 1 Samuel 23:16. Beautiful. We talk about friendship. Let this be what your closest friends are like. I love this verse. 1 Samuel 23:16. Then Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David in the woods and strengthened his hand in God. You got those kind of friends? Are your friendships based upon wanting to go to heaven and being willing to help you go to heaven? I will say again, life is not as complicated as you would anticipate. If you want to go to heaven, you need to surround yourself with people who love God and want you to go to heaven. And if you can find such a friend, you are rich. I can say one more time without hesitation, the good things that have come in my life and the path that I have chosen have been greatly influenced by those I put around me. Now let's talk a little bit on discussion, and we're going to limit our discussion to a little bit here because I want to finish this section this morning. But let's talk a little bit about friendship. What is the goal of true friendship? If you was to summarize the goal of true friendship, what's the goal? To help you get to heaven. Help you get to heaven. All right, second question. Why is it difficult to rebuke a friend? Why is it difficult to rebuke a friend? What's that? You care what they think about you. You know what? I'm not saying all of our friends are going to be Christians, okay? My closest friends really ought to be. I mean, I really, really ought to be. But let's suppose you don't have a friend that's a Christian. Have you ever worried about talking to them about the gospel? Have you ever wondered what that might bring? The better friends, the true friends, the closest friends are those you need to be honest with. But, you know, there's a fear of losing friendships. It wasn't easy for Jonathan to confront his dad. By the way, Jonathan ended up dying beside his dad in battle. And again, Jonathan is one of the great men of faith in the Scriptures. Okay, the third question. What would you want a friend to do when you are in the wrong? What would you want a friend to do? Say nothing? Talk to somebody else and talk to them saying, I hope my friend changes. That's what you need to do, right? Yeah. I need wounds when I'm in the wrong. Good friend. You know what? A good friend can take 2x4 and pop me on the head, okay? I mean, not literally. A good friend can do that. And I'll get mad there. And I'll go, you know, and then I think about it. Well, you know, they do care about me. And, you know, they've been right in the past. And I don't always agree with my good friends. Sometimes we may have differences. But nonetheless, I need that. You got any examples in your life? I gave you one about mine to Lynn Huggins years ago. I always remembered that. I appreciated it. You have any examples, any of you care to share along those lines? Don't have to with the number. Yes, go ahead, Josh.
Yes.
There's a lot of wisdom we need, and we don't always have the best wisdom, but we need wisdom in trying to help our friends. You think of David. What example in King David's life when he needed to have a very, very sensitive, critical subject brought up to him? What was probably the most significant rebuke in David's life? Right, Nathan and the sin of Bathsheba. And Nathan had a little interesting way to get David's righteous indignation stirred up and then turned at him, "Thou art the man." There's wisdom there. But I will say this, and I don't want to put a guilt trip on you. There are people that you can help that likely you'll be the only one to turn them. And I'm speaking among Christians. Christians, we're people. We have emotions. We have relationships. We have past hurts. And sometimes we can get carried away. I know that in a leadership position with an eldership and then with evangelists and then others that lead, many times we can be the subject of attacks. And that's okay. That goes with the territory. And sometimes we ought to have our heads beat on. We do stupid things. But sometimes there are things that happen in the background where somebody is getting carried away, just like Saul. And if somebody's mad at me, let me tell you, normally I'm the last one that can help them. Or if somebody's mad at you, you're the last one that can help them. It's going to take somebody else that's close to them and do like this. Listen, you're not thinking right. Name something you know this person has done. I really mean that. A congregation, a family needs people of good friends that will pull somebody aside, slow them down. It's important. How does the world try to break spiritual friendships? The world tries to break them down, don't they? How does the world do it? How does the world speak of spiritual people as a rule? They kind of hold them up and admire them and say, this is... Now, if they're really close and they're not doing the things everybody else is doing, they try to destroy the reputation. And they do it in various ways. Slander, anger, ostracizing. We may not like to admit it. We're highly social people. And there are times where people can put the onus on you. They put pressure on you through social means and others that if you go a certain direction, you're going to be punished. Last question. How can we find spiritual friends? How do you find gold? How do you find diamonds? I remember as a kid going out, tried to find rocks. Oh, I found something rich. I remember I think we was breaking up the concrete. Hey, this is shiny. I'd go take it to my dad. Is this gold? Yeah. How do you find spiritual friends? It's not easy, is it? It's not. How do you find them? Go where spiritual people go, right? Pursue them. You know what it's like when you're dating and you found somebody you really wanted and you pursued them, didn't you? One of the things we might ought to do is reevaluate our associations. And pursue those good people that can help us. By the way, do you want your children to have those kind of friends? I will say to parents, I mean this. I mean this is a point that I wished I could drill into the heart of every parent. You can influence who your children are friends with, but they're going to depend on the kind of parents you have into your home and the kind of people you associate with. I saw that in my dad's life and my mother's life. They were not really serving the Lord during that time, and we had some worldly people in, and you know, there wasn't a lot of spiritual influence as I was growing up with friends. But I've seen other Christians who they pursued friendships with parents who had children their age that were spiritual people. Guess what? They made friends with other Christians. I can name you some families, particularly in the Birmingham area, their house was a Grand Central Station for people coming and going that were Christians and Christian family coming and going. Do you want your children to go to heaven? Do you want to build a biblical faith? It's going to start with your friendships. I can't emphasize that enough. And I know that in, you know, there was a time, I know we were in Virginia and we were trying to help our children, but before we went to Virginia, we tried to find ways to be around Christians. Sometimes we'd go to some of these camps, sometimes we'd do other things. But we tried to make sure we were around good people, that our children could make friends with their children. You gotta want it. You gotta want it. Now, I'm gonna move on from this, and I really want to finish the lesson this morning. I want to talk to you about the friends of Saul. You know, Saul had friends. It's quite interesting. Looks like my chart ran out. I guess I definitely picked up the wrong chart today, so you're just going to have to follow with me on the printed outline here, and that'll be all right. Let's look, if we could, about the friends of Saul. Saul ended up having friends. I liken the friendships that Saul had to the friends that the prodigal son had in Luke 15 when he was living in his prodigal living. Remember Luke 15 when the prodigal son went out and was spending everything he had? Did he have friends when he still had money? He did. When did he lose his friendships? When he lost his money. Yeah, you're good for a party. This party. And the Bible says that when that money ran out and he had to go eat what the pigs ate, was got down to that point, no one gave him anything. Uh-oh, guess what kind of friends he had. You may have people, and again, I'm not trying to suggest a false motive for your friends. I'm not trying in any way to discourage you. But I am saying this. True friends are hard to come by. There's some people that are going to be your friends because of your power and position, because of your money, because of the perceived place that you have, and you're a popular person, and I'm with somebody of power. You find out why somebody's your friend when that gets taken away. And so be mindful of that. You know, it's interesting. Just because somebody gives you attention doesn't mean they're your real friend. Jude 16 talks about people with flattery, using flattery for a certain person. You know, all of us have needs socially. And one of the sad things that I've seen in life is there are people who have a pretty good radar concerning people who are socially in need. And if somebody is kind of isolated and they're socially awkward, somebody can come up to them and start giving them attention. Oh, you are so good. You see things others don't. Why, you're such a splendid person. And what they're doing is they're flattering you. Jude 16 says, these are grumblers, complainers, walking according to their own lust. They mouth great swelling words, flattering people to gain advantage. You see, I've seen this. I've seen people form what I would call almost their own kingdom. You see this in the world, and sometimes you see it in the church. Because this is talking about the church here in Jude 16. Where you find somebody who's been wounded, you find somebody that's socially in need, and you meet their social needs as long as they do what? Follow orders. They end up becoming part of what I call a kingdom. Sometimes I talk about it being the fellowship of the miserable, but it's not always that. I know of people that are very good at building kingdoms and cliques in which you've got to hate who they hate, you've got to believe what they believe. And I'm not talking about truth. I'm talking about pure personal power. So again, you need to look at your friends, who they are. In Galatians 4, again, I'll just make reference to this verse without reading it because I want to get into the position of talking about the friend of Saul in a minute. But in Galatians 4, 17 through 20, it talks about how people are zealous for you. They're zealous for you that they may exclude you. And here the idea is people are pursuing you to give you social needs so you can follow their company, but exclude those that they exclude. You don't want that happen in a local congregation. When those things happen, as Paul talked about here, your faith in Christ is compromised. He's talked about how he was in travail till Christ is formed in them again. The kingdoms that I've seen over the years in congregations normally that are based on worldliness, normally the people end up leaving the church and taking people with them. Sometimes they're successful at taking over a local congregation. And guess what happens to that congregation? They're scattered to the winds. And I'll say that as I've looked in Virginia and other places, and you look at the history of churches in some areas, they have been scattered because of a lack of leadership. A true leadership tries to help and intervene in those things and not let those things come to pass. Now, let's go to 1 Samuel 21:7. I want to finish up here in the Old Testament. Did you know Saul had friends? If you were to name the friends of Saul, who would they be? I would say one of them, at least his son, was cared about him. But as far as the friendships that Saul made, here was one that we read about in the Scripture. And let me get in the right book of Samuel, 1 Samuel 21 and verse 7. Here's one of his buddies. It says, "Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chief of the herdsmen who belonged to Saul." Now you think about this. Doeg was the chief of the herdsmen to Saul. What would that mean for him? Money. Power. And so he was there the day that David came in and he needed some food. And remember the priest there, Abimelech, gave him some food and gave him the sword of Goliath. He didn't know there were any problems. And what Doeg does, he goes back to King Saul and says, "Let me tell you what Abimelech did. He supported David. He armed David." And you know what Saul did in response to that? He came down there and he told Abimelech that he had betrayed him. And Abimelech says, "I didn't know anything. I thought David was your servant. Last time I heard, he was on your side. What do you mean?" Do you know what he did? He ordered Abimelech and all of the priests to be killed. Do you know who killed him? I want you to look at this. And you go to 1 Samuel 22 and verse 9. Doeg goes to Saul before this happened. He says, "Then he answered Doeg the Edomite, who was set over the servants of Saul, and said, 'I saw the son of Jesse going to Nob to Abimelech the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for him, gave him provision, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine.'" Now, what is Doeg doing here when he goes and tells Saul this? What's he doing? He's wanting Saul to get angry. And he does. He wants to be up here as one who's a real friend of Saul. "Look, I'm looking out for you, buddy." Saul gets angry enough. Yeah, he does. And what you end up seeing is that Saul's response in verse 7, we read part of it a minute ago, but he basically starts accusing everyone of his being against him. And that no one is on his side except Doeg, except him. Look at verse 16 of chapter 22. As Abimelech is trying to plead his own innocence, and he was innocent. And he says, "And the king said, 'You shall surely die, Abimelech, you and all your father's house.' Then the king said to the guards who stood about him, 'Turn and kill the priest of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not tell it to me.'" Now look at this next sentence. "But the servants of the king would not lift up their hand to strike the priest of the Lord." Even Saul's own servants knew this was a terrible sin. Did the priest live? Nope. Another opportunity for old Doeg here. Look at verse 18. And the king said to Doeg, "You turn and kill the priest." So Doeg the Edomite turned and struck the priest and killed on that day 85 men who wore a linen ephod. Also Nob, the city of the priest, he struck with the edge of the sword both men and women, children and nursing infants, oxen and donkeys and sheep, with the edge of the sword. There is Saul's, buddy. Saul feel good about this? Yep. Did Doeg end up enriching his standing before Saul? Yep. Now let's just suppose, brethren, if Saul somehow lost his kingship and lived through it, would Doeg still be his friend? If there were no sheep, no oxen, no cattle to take care of? Nah, this guy manipulated Saul. Have you ever seen somebody like that that had a quick temper and you could stick their temper and they'd get mad at somebody else and you'd charge in and you'd be the loyal person? Hopefully you don't do that. But I see people that when they have an anger like Saul, they're easily manipulated. And there are those who take advantage of it, just like a parasite. Let me show you something interesting. Look at Psalms 52. Psalms 52. I did not realize this until I was preparing for this class a few weeks ago, putting it together, the outline. Did you know that there is an entire psalm dedicated to Doeg? Did you realize that? Now I want you to look at what God said about the character of Doeg, and you want to ask you, is this the kind of friend you want to have? Psalms 52, 1 through 9. Notice if you look in the notes the above verse 1, it says, "To the chief musician, a contemplation of David when Doeg the Edomite went in and told Saul and said to him, David has gone to the house of Abimelech." Now here's God's estimation of Doeg. "Why do you boast in evil, O mighty man? The goodness of God endures continually. Your tongue devises destruction like a sharp razor working deceitfully. You love evil more than good, lying rather than speaking righteousness. You love all devouring words, you deceitful tongue. God shall likewise destroy you forever. He shall take you away and pluck you out of your dwelling place and uproot you from the land of the living, Selah. The righteous also shall see and fear and shall laugh at him, saying, here is the man who did not make God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and strengthened himself in his wickedness." Yeah, Saul had friends. A couple of more examples, and then the lesson will be yours. Look at 1 Samuel 23, 11 and 12. You know he had some other friends? There was a city by the name of Keilah. And Keilah, David had saved from the Philistines. These people would have been killed or worse. David's mighty men came in and saved them, and David started living there in Keilah. But you know, some of the men of Keilah, matter of fact, the men of Keilah, it's described in general, decided they wanted to be Saul's friend. David prayed to God and asked this question: "Will the men of Keilah deliver me into his hand? Will Saul come down as your servant has heard? O Lord God of Israel, I pray, tell your servant." And the Lord said, "He will come down." Then David said, "Will the men of Keilah deliver me into the hand of Saul?" And the Lord said, "They will deliver you." Ever help somebody? Hurt for them? Sacrifice for them? Done what you could for them, and then it comes up in a situation they sell you out? David had that happen. But I want to tell you, for Saul, for all of his friends, they didn't care about him. The reason why Saul had friends, I tell this joke sometimes, you know, about the kid that's so ugly that the only way you can get the dog to play with him, you tie some steak around his neck, you know, that's a joke. It's kind of, you know, everybody laughs at that. But you know, the reason why, you know why Saul had friends? Why did Saul have friends? He was the king. He had the money. He had the power. He had leeches. He didn't have any friends. Is that the first or second bell? Is that the first one? Okay. All right. Think about this. You know, it's quite interesting. As I said earlier, you look at where people end up. Look at who's around them. Look at who surrounds them. And I guess maybe that's right. I didn't have anyway, we'll just end there this morning. I appreciate your participation. We'll pick up with a new survey of the life of David next week. New outline. Thank you for your interest.